Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on your time zone. Welcome to Decrypting AI, the weekly conversation about artificial intelligence and emerging technology when applicable. I am Ryan Ozawa, and I am joined by Jason Nelson. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
Not bad, not bad. Thanks to the time shift, it is actually 6 a.m. For me, as we do this recording, which is why we started a little late, because I keep forgetting that. But when I say Jason is our intrepid reporter, he's also an excellent timekeeper. So thank you for the Slack message. We can get started. What's on tap for this week's show?
Well, I think we should probably start with the State of the Union. President Biden brought up AI in the it was a small note, but it was interesting that he did bring it up because as a lot of like as we've reported in the past, he has been the victim of AI deepfakes of him. And for example, to catch up the audience in New Hampshire during their primary, someone made a robocall using an AI generated Joe Biden to basically tell people don't show up to the polls. And so he addressed that. He even specifically addressed voice impersonators, which is what happened to him. Now I think we're used to image deepfakes and we're used to even video deepfakes, but voice deepfakes, especially ones that are this convincing, are what the FBI is warning about, what world leaders besides, just the spread of text misinformation, they're concerned about this because it sounds just like that person. And that's a new level of concern for a lot of people.
And this is the kind of thing that there's legislation pending in like 14 different states. So essentially the same bill. A national coalition is pushing for it. I thought it was interesting that it makes the State of the Union, just in the sense that, every word is pretty precious in terms of the amount of airtime and exposure that it gives. And this made the cut. Considering how pervasive AI is in every conversation, it made sense. I just think it's interesting when we talk about restricting it, is that I'm of the opinion that certainly we know that impersonating someone else for ill-gotten gains, whether it's to get their money or to disrupt an election, that the technology is pretty irrelevant. It's more about the act of what you're doing. So a bill that says making faking somebody for disinformation makes sense, but faking somebody using a particular technology, I think, is not so productive. Like someone could be really good at Photoshop or really good at 3D modeling, and that's different from AI. So would they not be covered by a law like this?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that AI is an easy target. It's
It's
easy
the
to point at that as the problem, like this thing, as opposed to lying to people about who you are, as opposed to, making up stuff about your opponents. That's harder to legislate because for one, it's politics, and that's kind of what politics does. But there's no thing you can latch on to that says this is what we're talking about. Whereas with AI, you could say, okay, see this technology? Let me show you what it does. See how it does this? That's what we're talking about. It's an easy target. It's an easy scapegoat for the bigger problem.
When you're talking about national policy, nobody actually wants to talk about national policy because it's boring and snoozy. So yes, ban AI voice impersonation, pretty straightforward to people. But he did say that in like the 14 words total applied to AI, that there's promise as well as peril. So good for him. Good for the technology, I guess.
Well, we'll get to
All right, well,
the peril
that's, whether that's the next story or not, what's second on your
Well,
list?
actually, let's go to that one.
All right.
Palantir is a software developer who won the U.S. Army's $175 million contract. last week. And basically what they're using the money for is to create advanced targeting and weapon systems for the military. And I think that is the peril that a lot of people still have in mind when they hear AI, especially in the context of AI on the battlefield. Like, you know, we all know about Terminator. We all know about Skynet. So why are you building it? Well, $175 million is why you're building it. So it's like, you know, and it's funny to me because, what was it, last? I think it might have actually been December. We wrote about Christopher Nolan talking about, he brought up AI. And, right. You know, a lot of people have been using the AI is an arms race analogy. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he's director of Oppenheimer, who's about the start of the nuclear arms race. So it's like, well, we have this frame of mind about where this is going. So why are you going? You know, it's kind of like what I asked the UC Berkeley professor last week. And it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, basically. You know, it's like we're going to try to get as close to destruction just to prove how close we can get to destruction. You know, it's that kind of thing. You know?
Well, arms races being what they are, it's you got to do it because if you don't, somebody else will. I mean, that's exactly. Always the justification. So we've actually covered a number of stories about AI being integrated into the battlefield. I think we've talked about, what was the name of the airplane? Like, you know,
Valkyrie.
The Valkyrie AI-assisted flight. Targeting, though, is very specific. Like, that's what this is. What I actually, my first reaction to this story was $175 million is what, like 10 toilet seats? Like, that's actually, it's actually a pretty low number, I thought. The other thing that that you helped me understand in covering the story is that although they talk about the AR targeting system and it's about these tactical vehicles, basically trucks, I thought it was fascinating that the entire press release, all the stories about it, I mean, well, the stories about it, we'll call it a truck, but nothing that comes out of the military will call it a truck, a four-wheel vehicle that looks like a truck.
Right.
It's a tactical thing, but it's not a truck. But in any case, that's why the number is a little low. They're not actually buying 10 trucks. They're buying 10 computer systems that go into the truck.
So, that go into the truck, right.
So
yeah, I think that
$15 million a piece is now sounds reasonable.
But I think the truck image is probably for the public's benefit.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
To give them something they can conceptualize, you know, because really if you gave this thing a form, it would probably be 10 stories tall, and, you know, weigh several tons, you know, a Gundam robot or something. If you gave it the form it should have.
Well, that would have given it definitely more front page play. It's called Titan, the Tactical Intelligence Targeting Access Node, because nobody loves acronyms or backronyms better than the U.S. government. But it's a Peter Thiel company, which may or may not increase or decrease its likelihood of scaring you in the in its development. And it's going to take them 2 years to get to this. So, you know. I don't know.
Using artificial intelligence. It won't be on the battlefield tomorrow, but
right.
I think the bigger point is that there's so much money and so much focus going towards putting this stuff on the battlefield. And like you just said, it's about if you don't do it, somebody else will.
Yeah.
Right. So you know, you're going to have, who else did we cover doing this? Israel did it. Israel implemented AI technology in the Iron Dome. So, I mean, and so that thing's running 24/7 and it's basically backed by an artificial intelligence.
Right, right.
You know, so.
And it's inevitable it gets applied this way, but this, you know, for the same reason why it can catch and diagnose cancer cells before we can see it on an X-ray or before we can detect it in any other way, it makes sense that it can help you find a target better. Unfortunately, it still doesn't differentiate between, say, civilians and combatants, but maybe we'll get there. Maybe there's an advancement in this technology that could actually make a change like that that's significant. Well, before I lose any more sleep, what have we got? Well, let's go to something a little lighter. I mean, we've talked a lot about recreating celebrities, some against their will, but many with them. And I think that's what we have in this case. And what's this about Digital Marilyn?
So a company called Soul Machines out of San Francisco created a digital Marilyn Monroe AI. And as most people know, or hopefully everyone knows, Marilyn Monroe died in the 1960s. And so what this thing does is it lets you talk to Marilyn Monroe as if she were sitting in front of you. What I thought was interesting about this AI versus others is that it requires you to actually have a camera and a microphone set up.
Hmm.
And whereas most AI are text-based.
Right.
This one actually wants you to interact with it like you would another person. And that's interesting. What's also interesting is that you have this, there's this question about how much the estates are involved.
Right. In
different projects. Right. Now, Soul Machine says they work with the estates of all the people that they do this for. But at the same time, we're hearing reports that that might not be true, but it's coming from someone who may be from a rival company.
Right.
So it's right. Like, right. And unfortunately, one of the byproducts of all of these different AI companies is they're not all very forthcoming with information.
Yeah.
And I guess they do that for contract reasons. But, you know, like we had, like if I had a digital Tupac Shakur, who is an AI chatbot that you could talk to, but someone else created a hologram AI Tupac Shakur that can perform at concerts, who owns a copyright?
Yeah.
Right? It starts to become that question.
Well, it's interesting because this is the one that sort of caught our eye, but this company has other AI celebrities, a couple at least, that they're very all out there. And actually, Digital Marilyn isn't available yet. But certainly as somebody who is iconic and memorable, and actually probably for people our age and, you know, who weren't in the world when she was the celebrity that she was, it's pretty interesting. I'm not, you know, entirely sold, I mean, how realistic it is, but I guess the selling point is that it's an interactive visual of her, as well as the voice and supposedly the personality. The company was calling it biological AI, their name for the technology. But it certainly doesn't look as photorealistic as some others, except of course that it's going to be interactive and live. So I'm sure that takes a little bit of processing. Let's talk a little bit about the conflict though, because there is another company that maybe 10 years ago got in the news for creating a holographic Marilyn Monroe specifically. And they were actually in conflict with the estate of Marilyn because they said they had the rights conveyed to them, I believe, from the film studios to do it. And the family was, you know, in opposition to that particular usage, correct?
Right. And I believe that was called Virtual Marilyn. Virtual Marilyn was the name of that company. And it does bring up the question of, okay, so just because the family doesn't like it, doesn't mean you can't do it.
Right.
Because the family may not own the rights to Marilyn Monroe's likeness.
Mm-hmm.
You would think that your family would have some say in that, but that's not necessarily true, depending on what kind of contract was signed. So, and then if you have someone who signed, for example, some type of Creative Commons license, which means anybody can use the likeness, you know, what do you do then? I mean, really all you can do at that point is just, we don't approve of this.
And actually, we've seen this already in terms of families or estates of celebrities getting into conflict with the Hollywood studios because, you know, using their name, it sounds like something that would be perennially within the purview of the family or estate of a person, but because their work is and was produced by someone who paid all the bills to get it on, you know, 10,000 screens around the world, they would say, well, and I think that this is actually a stronger case for an artificial intelligence company, because they're going to be basing the content, the creation on those medias, those media productions, to create the AI version. So anyway, we probably are going to continue covering the story. We'll see who's suing who, but I thought it was interesting. And
I reached back out to Soul Machines about that, because, you know, it's, you know, it is a question that is coming up a lot with AI, especially after the SAG-AFTRA WGA strikes last year, about your likenesses. Now, I would imagine it's easier to do this with a deceased person.
Yes.
Who died a long time ago, well before this conversation started, and then it would be for someone who's alive today.
Right, right.
Like, I can't just whip up a Tom Hanks AI, right?
But well, I mean,
and not get sued into oblivion.
Right, exactly.
But I could do a Buster Keaton, you know, yeah. I could do a Charlie Chaplin, you know, that kind of thing, and probably wouldn't raise too many eyebrows.
Yeah, but I think we're going to be waiting a while. I mean, there's only Mickey Mouse that came out of copyright, but you're right, absolutely right. And it's the extras, it's the lower people on the totem pole in Hollywood that are signing contracts now that says, oh, by the way, you know, here in subparagraph 6A, you know, section 3, we happen to say that after you take this job, we're going to be able to do whatever we want with your likeness. So,
right. Which is what, when I went to the private screening of the Razor series that mm-hmm. we covered over the weekend, that was one thing that the creators were talking about is, you know, it's here to stay. We just have to figure out a way to make it so that I'm compensated, you're compensated, the A-lister's compensated, the person who just got started is compensated. We just have to make it fair.
Right, right. Well, let's a couple more stories. Let's go back in history. For AI, it's a pretty short history, mainstream AI. There was finally, in this last week, resolution, question mark, to the very scary and odd coup attempted at OpenAI, the leading AI company, when the board of directors decided that Sam Altman had lost their faith and trust. And on a Friday, which is when the most interesting things tend to happen, basically removed him suddenly from the company. And it was a surprise not just to him, but to his other fellow co-founder and board member. Anyway, the two things happened this week because of one of them, which is the resolution of the internal investigation into what the heck happened when they tried to get rid of Sam Altman. And as a result, also, they've modified the composition of the board. What was the finding of the investigation?
Well, first let's back up to what you were talking about just a second ago with what happened. So Altman was unceremoniously kicked out of OpenAI last November. And a lot of the chatter was, for one, he wasn't being forthcoming with the company about what was going on, mm-hmm. or the board. And then the other was that they may have actually created an artificial general intelligence, and the people were freaking out and said, we need to stop this right now. So, you know, and that was the other bit of chatter that we covered. Mm-hmm. So what this did was basically put the final, this is what happened, and, you know, we want to move on from here, basically, because right now they're mounting up with a lawsuit defense against Elon Musk,
right.
One of their co-founders that we covered, right? So, you know, the board basically, I guess you could say, wipe the slate clean between OpenAI and Sam Altman, reinstated him to the board of directors, and basically cleared his leadership of the company.
Right. And I think, you know, when you talked about what was happening at the time, probably the one that was the most compelling narrative was that the reason why the board did it was because they were close to developing AGI or some sort of major milestone in artificial intelligence development. It was scary, it was frightening, and they were like, this is not the direction we want to go in. I think the primary conflict we're always going to be covering about OpenAI is its nonprofit pro-humanist origins and the fact that it realized it was sitting on the biggest mountain of potential cash, you know, $1 billion, $3 billion valuation possibly, and they couldn't pass that up. And that's what the conflict was. But I do believe that, you know, the finding said it had nothing to do with product safety or security or how fast it was developing. Definitely wasn't a money question or anything. It was that they, you know, felt that there wasn't enough transparency, that Sam Altman wasn't being forthright. And they actually said in the conclusion of this investigation that they could have, they were entitled to do what they did, but it was probably not the right decision. And then apart from that, they basically put him back on the board, which I think, you know, makes sense, and added a couple of other people, but
they added someone from Sue Desmond Hellman, former CEO of Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Nicole Seligman, former EVP and global general counsel of Sony, and I'm probably going to mess this up by
CEO and chair of Instacart.
They're expanding. And one thing I think they're trying to do is show that it's not the Sam Altman show and that it's a diverse group of people sitting on this board. It's not, you know, it's different people come from different backgrounds who also know about this technology. Yeah, they're trying to make it seem like we have this under control and moving forward. It's all good. It's basically what it comes down to, I believe.
Yeah, people just look for the composition of the board to see how independent it is. And certainly, whether it's this company or any other company, you do want to know if it's going to be just a bunch of yes men and a personality-driven company, which OpenAI is pretty close to. It's certainly not a Musk company, but Sam Altman is the face of the company. All right. Well, finally, let's bring us full circle back to elections, because this was your story just yesterday, I think. Boy, time flies. A couple of interesting things, about, including the timing of all of this. But the headline that went across the wires was that Google's Gemini AI will now basically refuse to answer questions about the elections. That is their solution to protecting the community from being misdirected, misjudged, misinformed about, election integrity. So what's going on?
Well, okay. So it started, the whole drama started because of a blog post Google made for India. And in that blog post, they basically said that they're clamping down on the use of Gemini to respond to questions related to elections to prevent the spread of misinformation. Okay. But people started noticing that other versions of Gemini do it too. And the screenshots that I included in the article was, I'm based in California, so US person. I asked Gemini, when is the 2024 presidential election? And it said, I'm still learning how to answer this question. In the meantime, try Google search. So it won't answer the question. I didn't put it in the article, but I even tried who is in the 2024 presidential election. And it gave me the same answer. So you can't even ask it anything about the 2024 election, especially, at least of all in the United States. But I wanted to see if maybe this was a wider thing. So I took the same question and ran it through ChatGPT and Claude, Anthropic's AI model. And they both responded with answers to the question. You know, ChatGPT was pretty similar, straightforward with, it's on November 5th, 2024 in the United States, something like that, right?
Right.
Whereas Claude went into like this whole big thing about the 2024 election, what's coming up after that, what the election means, and this whole thing. It didn't have a problem at all with answering the question. under the hood, I think it's interesting to point out that each of these companies, Google, OpenAI, Anthropic, have addressed using their AI models for political reasons. Claude, Anthropic, flat out said, we don't want politicians using our AI model for political campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
They said it in writing. They put that out in February, I believe. And then in January, OpenAI didn't say the same thing, but they really emphasized not letting ChatGPT be used to spread political misinformation.
Right.
Right. Google. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I think the it's interesting in the sense that in the case of Google, because those other two companies, their front ends are AI. That's all they do. So they have to be very confident in its answers. And I did enjoy sort of the difference between I'm still learning how to answer the question versus, you know, three pages of context about the election. But the reason why it was a stark example was that it says, oh, I'm still learning to answer this question. Please use Google search. And if you use Google search, you get the information box, you get the immediate answer in a bold text at the top of the search engine with the date, November 5th, and links to Wikipedia and everything. Like, it's the same company. It's, a big corpus of data that they're drawing from, but they're 100% confident, I guess, that their search engine isn't going to misinform somebody, which I don't believe is true, but the AI could potentially do that. So they're like, we know this, but we want you to ask it in a different way.
I think, or ask it somewhere else so we don't have to be responsible for what comes out.
Well, again, it's a matter of the danger of the week, the big baddie of the week. Nobody's scared right now, I guess, of SEO causing misinformation. And I could publish a million web pages saying that the election is on the 3rd and change the answer that you get from Google. But they're confident that's not going to happen. But they're worried that the AI can be tricked, poisoned, or in some way be a source of misinformation. But it doesn't reflect well, as you pointed out, against the competition.
Well, I think, if I were to harbor a guess, I would think what they're concerned about really is hallucinations, where it's not so much someone is maliciously trying to get it to respond with bad information, is that it might do it itself because of the hallucinations that we all know generative AI is prone to do. It might come up with something. Like we recovered the Singularity AGI, the rogue co-pilot a couple of weeks ago that was just spitting out. Yeah. Right. So they're trying to say, okay, hopefully it doesn't do that. November 5th, vote for me. So we'll just cut it out at the root, so it's not even a concern for us as a company, let alone for global populace.
Well, I mean, to me, it made me remember Threads, Meta's attempt to go after Twitter, which I'm a big fan of. And I only post Twitter posts when I can post something about how terrible Twitter is. but, Meta is saying that we don't want politics on Threads. And yet it's the top trending topic now that they've introduced trending topics on Threads. And you can't ask it questions about COVID even now, right? You type anything related to COVID, the pandemic, and it's like, we're not going to give you information. Here's a link to the CDC. And a lot of people are saying, like, the CDC is not where I would send somebody. But in any case, it's a matter of widely known information that could be misrepresented in some way. And the answer for these companies are to not answer them at all, which I think is fascinating.
Yeah. Well, and we'll keep covering and seeing what's going on.
Totally. Well, we've consumed yet another delicious half an hour of valuable time. And it is 6:30 in the morning here, and I'm going to need to get my wits about me before jumping on the edit desk. But, Jason, it is always a pleasure to connect with you and to do Decrypting AI, our weekly conversation about artificial intelligence based on the coverage of all emerging technologies in the Emerge section of Decrypt. Let people know where they can find us on social media and, of course, our coverage at Decrypt.
All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us again on Decrypting AI. You can follow Ryan and myself. Ryan is at Hawaii on social media, and I am at Dragonwolf Tech. And as always, you can find our work and much more at decrypt.co.
Fantastic. Well, we'll catch you next week, Jason.
All right. Take care.